This morning I gave a brief quotation from the Bhagavad Gita. Nimittamatram bhavasavyasachit. Be an instrument in my hands, in the hands of God. Regard yourself as an instrument in the hands of God. It's a sublime teaching. And first of all, just one more remark concerning that is that no instrument ever says, I am an instrument. So one has to be very cautious in declaring oneself to be an instrument in the hands of God. Whenever this temptation arises, look at your fountain pen, it doesn't say, I am an instrument in your hands. It's not even, it doesn't think it's an instrument in the hands of God. So one has to distinguish, one has to learn to distinguish between being an instrument in the hands of God or thinking that one is an instrument in the hands of God. However, that instruction occurs in a verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Mayaivaite nihatah purvameva nimittamatram bhavasabhyasachin. I have destroyed all these people. You merely be an instrument in my hands and fight. And earlier in the same verse, Jitva shatrun bhungshva rajyam samriddham tasmatta muttishta yashovalabhasva. So get up, do what has to be done, knowing that it's the Lord's energy that works through you, and gain great fame, wealth and prosperity. To illustrate this, there is a funny story. This is a pure fiction, absolutely fiction. In a certain village in the Himalayas, there was a plague of cobras. And these cobras were unfortunately trodden upon by children, by cattle. And the cobras used to bite them, and therefore there were lots and lots of casualties. And this village had a chieftain or a king. That king had a little daughter, beautiful little girl, as many of these Himalayan children are. People used to bring him complaints, my child was killed by a snake, cobra, my cow was killed by a cobra, and he could do nothing. When the girl had come of age and had to be married off, the king thought he was very clever and had it announced by beat of drum that this girl is up for marriage and she would be given in marriage to the first young man who kills a cobra and brings proof thereof. What the king actually thought was, though only one man, the first man, would get the girl, all the young men in the village will rush around killing all the cobras. And so we would be rid of this menace and the daughter would get married. Not only to the first man who kills a cobra, but who runs fast and claims. It was announced for, let's say, a Sunday. Sunday went, Monday went, the whole week went, nobody turned up. Of course the girl was beautiful and many of the young men in the village would have loved to marry her, but not at the expense of risking their own lives confronting a cobra. Not worth that much. Now the king was a bit more worried. The cobras were there, and on top of it, the girl couldn't be given away in marriage. Because once the king had announced a competition, he couldn't withdraw it. So, he went into a half a coma, not knowing what to do. Lo and behold, one day a young man rushed into the royal presence. Here, here! And the king didn't even make any inquiries. He got hold of the girl and said, here, 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 take her and marry her and go away. The whole thing was over in minutes. The wedding night, the bride asked the brave bridegroom, oh, aren't you marvelous, aren't you fantastic? No one has done this. No one is as brave and as heroic you are, as you are. And it's wonderful that I have got you for my husband. Then she said, now, you know, I have prepared, dried it and cleared the contents of the cobra. You brought only half, the tail half. I think if you give me the other half also, I'll also cure it and then put it together and make myself a lovely belt which I'll cherish all through my life as this symbol of your, not only your love for me, but your bravery and courage and all that. She said, what did you ask? The other, the head part. See, I didn't find it, is it? I didn't find it. I only found the tail lying on the roadside. I picked it up and showed it to your father. And your father gave you to me. That's all I know. I don't know who took the head away. What a brave soul! What a tremendous exploit! Krishna asks us to remember this. That whatever you and I are going to do tomorrow has already been ordained in some way, whether as possibilities or certainties, are half of each. And moreover, all the things that we do, we are able to do only because of the endowment of the energy, of the intelligence, and whatever it is that we have received from, the body has received from somebody else, something else, some other power. It is that power that enables us to do this. Without him there is nothing. Nothing is done. That's one story. The other concerns the true spirit of Karma Yoga, which is neither mere action nor abstention from action, but doing what has to be done. This is what has come to be twisted and tortured into the poor little word duty. Doing what has to be done is what is called duty. The phrase doing what has to be done has loose ends, and you think by using the word duty you have tied them all up. And that's the danger. Doing what has to be done. But with a constant awareness of the Divine Presence in oneself, around oneself. This is perfection, this is Siddhi. And to illustrate this, there is another very interesting story. This is quite a popular story which occurs in a number of legends. And as a matter of fact, there are people who declare that this is part of some sort of a historical fact, because it is woven into a proverb, Kokkandra Nantaya Konganava. There was a young man who wanted to become a great yogi and acquire great powers. Siddhi, unfortunately, means both perfection as well as psychic powers. So one has to be very careful in translating it. And he had heard from other great yogis that siddhis are gained by meditation, using certain mystic formulas called mantra. He learned some from a great master and wanted to go set himself up under a tree or something and meditate. He did so for quite a number of years. Nothing happened, or at least visibly nothing happened. He was getting a bit fed up. One day he had his bath in the river and was about to resume his seat under a tree when something fell on his head. Almost instinctively he passed his hand over the head. Some filth. A sort of bird, crane or vulture or something must have been sitting there, and well, it performed its natural function. But then to this man, it was more bathing and more washing and more, it's a nuisance. So he looked up, what on earth? And strangely enough, as soon as his gaze fell on the culprit, the bird, burned to ashes. Suddenly, he sat very straight and he said, aha, I've got siddhi now, I've got some power. Psychic power has been aroused. And so he had finished his sadhana, his yoga practice. And as soon as that thought entered him, that it's okay now. He felt hungry, ravenously hungry. He got up, stood in front of the first house that he found, and he stood and said, I want some food, I'm hungry. Just then a young girl walked past him into the house, wet clothes and a pitcher on her hips. She had been to the river and she greeted him and walked inside. And the greeting suggested that she would give him something to eat. So he stood there. 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. What is going on here? She doesn't know who I am. After about half an hour, I suppose she sensed that this man was incensed. So she took her own time. And eventually came to the holy man with some food. And she came, he said, don't play that joke here. I'm not that crane that you burnt with your gaze. She said, my God, how did she know this? Nobody was there. When I performed this miracle, nobody was there. And how did this silly little girl know this? He looked a bit puzzled. Take this food, if you like, and go to the next village. And there is a man there on the seventh house on your right. Well, if you have more questions, he will answer. took it and he had no stomach to eat it. He ran to the other place, hoping to meet a very great yogi, supreme yogi. Instead, what he saw shocked him. It was a butcher's shop. This boy was in ordinary clothes. He was not a swami, sadhu, conspicuously dressed or made up. So he was walking along quietly, looking here, looking there. And that butcher standing outside, sitting outside his house, called him, "Hey, hey, come here. That girl sent you to me." He said, "My God, there is no telephone, there is no telegram. How did he know?" Another story. Good, he said, walked in. "Are you the person?" He said, "Yes, yes, I am the person. Please come, please sit down. And then we will discuss it a little later." He went on chopping meat and giving it to the customers. "Hari Om Narayan, Hari Om Narayan, Narayan, chup, chup, chup." This great student of yoga was sitting there thoroughly disgusted. "This is the man who is going to teach me? Me? Who is?" Okay, try. About an hour later, he closed that department, took him by the hand inside the house and showed him a seat, sit down, and then went inside. This man watched while he bathed his aged father, nursed his mother, etc., etc. All sorts of things had to be done in the house. He was busy doing all that. And then did his own form of worship. Then came, fell flat at the feet of this little yogi. He said, "Please forgive me, you are God incarnate. Here is food." And that man said, "I have learnt the lesson I came here to learn. Thank you for your food." Went away. In other words, he saw that if you do whatever you have to do, whatever you do, or whatever you have to do in the right spirit, that itself is yoga. That is, your heart is united with God consciousness and the body goes on doing what it has to do. Your heart is totally devoted to God and the body goes on doing what it has to do. The body belongs to the world, the body has come out of the world, it is sustained by the world, by society, by the people with whom, amongst whom you live. Your life, your comforts are all determined by the people with whom you live, and therefore your body must reciprocate that service. Render unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar. The body belongs to the earth. Don't bluff that is also spiritual. I am eating your food, I must serve you in some way. I am breathing the air, so I must serve the natural environment in some way or the other. Whatever I am getting from wherever has to be reciprocated. In some way or the other, whatever I can, I have. I take whatever you have and I give whatever I have. That's all I can do. But that I must do. But the heart does not belong to the world. The spiritual heart does not belong to the world. The mind does not belong to the world. That is offered to God in constant remembrance. And in the constant regeneration of the correct spirit and the attitude in which one has to live, the two together. That two together forms karma yoga. Neither merely sitting and meditating and saying, "I am in samadhi, so everybody must run round and give me my food and look after me, I am in samadhi." Nor saying, I'll busy myself from day morning till night doing all sorts of humanitarian activity, work, and that work is going to save me, no, this will not save you also. There is a story which has a very different context. But just to draw the moral from that story, if you are a philanthropist and you do tremendous lot of good to the society without the spiritual consciousness, that which serves the society will be honored. They will hang your, they may even hang you before, but eventually they will hang your picture everywhere. They will put up statues in your name. But you yourself may go to hell. With your body served the community, the body will be worshipped, adored, looked after, adored. The form will be adored. Your name will be praised by everybody. But the you, the real you, the soul, the spirit, it's a very funny thing. Allison has made a big statue of the Swami, it's standing there. And if the Swami is not careful in making sure that the spirit is also divine, it is quite possible that in a few years' time there may be a cat licking the foot of that statue there. And that's the Swami. Reincarnate Swami as a cat. If the spirit is not evolved or offered to the divine, where it belongs? The spirit belongs to the divine. The mind belongs to the divine. Consciousness belongs to the divine. The body and life force, they belong to the world. If one is very cautious in dealing appropriately with these one's own endowments, if one is cautious, then there is yoga, karma yoga. If one is not cautious, either you think you are meditating on all the time, 24 hours of the day, then you are indebted to the whole world. And that debt has to be discharged one way or the other. And if you are busy doing all sorts of good things, you will be adored and worshipped, the form will be adored and worshipped, but the spirit is hell, dark as hell, and it will go there. To combine the two, ma manasmara yudhyacha, constantly contemplate the Lord and do what has to be done here, is the message, I believe, of both Christ and Krishna. Om Shakti, Om Shakti, Om Shakti, Om, Om Shakti, Om Shakti, Om Shakti, Om.
Om Shakti, Om Shakti, Om Shakti, Om, Om Shakti, Om Shakti, Om Shakti, Om.